Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your patience and welcome to the FBN Holdings PLC full year 2020 financial results conference call. Thank you all for taking the time to join the call today and for your continuous interest in FBN Holdings. My name is Tolu Oluwole, and following an overview by the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings, an interactive Q&A session will be available. However, before I hand over the call to the Group Managing Director, I would like to go through a few conference protocols. Participants are encouraged to please use the raise hand function to ask questions, and microphones will be unmuted once called upon to speak. For efficiency of this process, we'll be batching the questions in two or three before responding. And after asking questions, microphones must be unmuted except when speaking. This is very important, please, to avoid interference. Questions could also be submitted in the Q&A function as well. That said, I would like to hand over the call to the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings PLC, Mr. UK AK. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Tolu. Good afternoon and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the FBN Holdings Investor and Analyst Result Presentation for the full year ended December 31, 2020. My name is UK Eke, and I'm the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings PLC. I'm also delighted to introduce my colleagues that are on this call with me. As always, Dr. Shola Adeduto is the CEO of First Bank. Kayode Akinkugbe, the CEO of FBN Quest Merchant Bank. Wale Ariyebi, the CFO of FBN Holdings. Patrick Yamabo, CFO, First Bank. Shegu Alebiosun, the CRO, First Bank, and Ini Ebon Group Executive Treasury, Financial Institutions and International Banking. Of course, Tolu has already introduced himself, the head IR. So much has been said of the year 2020. Without doubt, a very challenging year for individuals, families, businesses, and the world at large, bringing with it disruptions to the global economy and recession across the globe. Nigeria, our home base, had its fair share of the challenges. Indeed, we went into a recession in the third quarter of 2020, but quickly recorded a 0.11% growth in the fourth quarter of 2020. And that is the context under which we operated. Just to set the context for the result we're about to present. We believe overall, we recorded a very strong performance, which is a clear testament to the resilience of our institution and the benefits we've made over the years in strengthening our risk management architecture. Now, our strong and resilient performance, which I have just mentioned, was driven largely by revenue diversification with increase in non-interest income. Also, we saw clearly our unassailable leadership in digital and agent banking. And then we also saw a well-diversified and solid funding base, which continues to enhance our liquidity position, both FCY and LCY. We further strengthened our risk management practices and control environment, resulting in improved asset quality, as I would show in the slides that will follow after this introduction. So starting from slide 6, the profit for the year grew by 22%, just rounding up, to 89.7 billion. This is profit after tax. And the non-interest income recorded a growth of 26.7 percent year on year, closing at 174.7 billion. And this result, we are proud to say, where despite the very challenging rate environment, evidenced by decline in fixed income rates and higher cash reserving requirements, as we all saw in 2020. And also this led to a decline to a 10.9% year on year on the interest income, closing at 384.8 billion naira. However, we are glad to say that we mitigated the impact of the net interest income by containing our interest expense through a deliberate and carefully executed program around driving costs, low-cost deposits, and also reducing the costs of deposits. You know, of course, that we are a low-cost product producer. And so this has reflected in the cost of funds, which you will see in the slides that follow. I also want to recall, I'm sure you remember, that 5 years ago, we outlined our strategy, our intention to diversify our income stream by boosting the non-interest income through transaction-led banking model. We believe this decision we took 5 years ago has minimized the burden on our customers. Indeed, it came in very handy during the lockdown period by providing seamless access to banking services as well as supporting government's efforts, and indeed the efforts of donor agencies in reaching Nigerians with COVID-19 support programs or palliatives. I would like to emphasize the very significant progress we made in our agent banking proposition. The electronic banking revenue increased by 1.3% despite the 50% regulatory reduction in fees. The growth was supported by expansive volume development. And so we recorded a 28.1% volume growth in our USSD proposition. And we saw a 1.0 trillion volume in terms of counts, and then a 43.4% growth in mobile banking volume to 248.2 million transaction volume as at December 31, 2020. Similarly, we are glad to report that our agent banking network increased by over 100% from the prior period of 2019, 50,000 to 100,000 agents across 772 local government areas of Nigeria. And we're also proud to report that we crossed the 9 trillion naira threshold for value of transactions processed from inception to date. We also processed 9.78 trillion compared to 3.1 trillion in the prior year. More importantly, we are monetizing our agent banking and its revenue contribution to e-business. As you will have noticed over the years, we have seen year-on-year growth in the contribution of our agent banking business, and the e-business income continues to grow relative to the total non-interest income. To further deepen our agent banking offerings, we enhanced our services and are expanding the reach beyond Nigeria. So this is a model we intend to replicate even outside Nigeria. We remain focused on driving our efficiencies and improving our cost to income ratio. We're happy to report that in 2020, operating expenses was up only marginally by 0.5% year on year, which is significantly below the inflation rate. And we can immediately confirm that the major drivers of the marginal increase were largely regulatory costs, inflation-induced adjustments, or increases rather, and of course we know the adjustment to the currency which happened in 2020. Despite all of this, and despite the sheer size of our operations and our group, we recorded only 0.5% increase in OPEX year on year. Now, our customer deposits grew very significantly year on year also, which basically speaks to the strength of our brand, the security that we offer, and the safety that we offer to the banking public. Net loans to customers grew by 19.7%, nearly 20%. And we're very deliberate in writing checks, basically supporting trade finance activities and providing support to the manufacturing sector, to the power sector, oil and gas, and general commerce. These were the sectors of growth. And so quality remains of utmost importance to us. And I can confirm that we have very limited exposure to those sectors that were badly impacted by COVID-19, specifically aviation and hospitality. We have very, very minimal exposures to those sectors. We have also maintained a very strong market access. Again, speaking to the strength of the brand, and you recall that it was during 2020 that we achieved our $350 million Eurobond issuance under the 144A Reg S 5-year senior unsecured Eurobond. Now, the interesting thing about this issuance was that it was the first benchmark Eurobond issue by an African bank in 2020. Even on the back of the COVID, we were able to successfully issue this Eurobond, and it was well supported by global investors. So we are proud of that achievement, which has opened the door for other African issuers to do their own Eurobonds. Moving on to slide 7, you can see very clearly that the strengthening of our risk management architecture, leveraging technology in credit administration and deepening the bench strength in the risk management division has continued to yield the desired results positively. Our asset quality position improved even further, and we're able to bring the NPL ratio down to 7.7% from 9.9% that we saw in 2019. Of course, as we confirmed during the last time we engaged you, we have continued to maintain a less than 1% NPL ratio on our vintage book. So we are proud of what we have achieved on the NPL side of things. During the year, precisely in June of 2020, we exited the insurance or the underwriting business by selling our stake, that is 65% stake in our FBN insurance franchise to Sanlam Group. The net proceeds of sale were injected into the commercial bank. And together with the organic capital accretion of the group, the commercial bank has improved its capital position and closed the year 2020 with a capital adequacy ratio of 17%. I'm happy to report that all the businesses in our portfolio that are regulated by capital are running well above the regulatory capital requirements or thresholds. And then we will continue to accrete capital so that we will be able to expand our market share and report profits, obviously, to the delight of our stakeholders. Turning very quickly to slide 8. As we progress along in our strategic planning cycle, we'd like to show you on that slide the progress we have made so far. And as you can see very clearly, there were improvements across all metrics. These reports or these successes represent for us landmarks and a product of deliberate execution of our strategies. And we remain resolute that we'll be able to deliver our 5-year strategic numbers. And we will, in the course of our discussions, share with you when you ask your questions on what those targets for us are. Notably, I would like to reiterate the progress we have made in terms of asset quality and also remind you, for those that have been tracking the company and following our progress, that in 2016, 5 years ago, we had the NPL ratio at about 24.4%. And so reporting a 7.7% NPL ratio and continuing on that southward trend with a plan to go below 5% in 3 years, you can see the remarkable job we have done with transforming this group and positioning it right on the path of sustainable growth and profitability. I will turn to slide 9, and there you will find some of the initiatives that we have implemented over the past year. These are expected to deliver significant growth, not just for 2021, but also beyond 2021, as we seek to expand our footprint and deepen our digital transformation. We believe this is key. We believe that it's no longer about bricks and mortar, but it's about transforming our platforms and providing the digital space for our customers to do their banking transactions. This will be instrumental in repositioning us into market leadership. They will also be instrumental in enthroning and sustaining the quality loan book that we all desire to have. And so improving our risk management profile and providing us with a strong and solid funding base. This will be the rationale for all of these initiatives we're executing. And we can say proudly that we are now well positioned to regain our leading position as market leader, not just in Nigeria, but in Africa. I would skip all the other slides and quickly go to slide 24 to conclude. And to say that although there are signals for improvement in the global health conditions, and also hopes have been raised on account of the vaccines that are now being administered, this year will still be full of challenges. There is no doubt about it. The renewed waves and the new variants of the virus pose concerns for the outlook. Notwithstanding, we are resolute and we remain focused and steadfast. And we believe that those elements we can control them very, very well and be able to deliver superior performance. We believe also that as the economy reopens and as Nigeria is planned or projected to grow 2.5-3.5%, we will be one of those institutions that would certainly gain from the renewed optimism. We are well positioned. We have the enabling platforms and structures. We have the processes that would allow us to gain market share for 2021 and 2022 and beyond. Our focus areas are basically deploying the two-pronged approach of driving our revenue through transaction-led banking model, whilst also implementing initiatives that are geared towards containing operating costs. And this will help bring down our cost to income ratio. We believe that there's more work to do in that area, and we're committing to delivering steadily reducing cost to income ratio, not just for this year, but in subsequent years. We also believe that we will continue to strengthen and improve our investment in digitalization, in innovation, and expansion in financial services. We will remain disciplined in executing our strategic initiatives, and we will keep evaluating our options so we can support our vision of remaining a dominant financial services player in Africa, not just in Nigeria. And so I'd like to end here and invite Tolu to moderate the question and answer session. Tolu, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, JMD. Just as a reminder, I would like to reiterate the protocols again. Participants can use the raise hand function to ask questions, and the microphone will be unmuted once called upon to speak. We'll take questions in two or three batches before responding, and then once after asking questions, please keep the microphone muted to avoid interference. Just before we start, there are a few set of questions that have come in. And so we'll take those questions first, and then we will go to the other function. So on the mobile, the first question, on the new mobile application introduced in FBN Senegal, could you help in understanding the potential in other countries? That's the first question. And then the second one is on the issue of the telecom saga recently on the USSD in Nigeria that has been ongoing regarding who will pay the back charges due to telecoms companies and the recent intervention by the government. More importantly, since USSD is still currently a major channel to reach unbanked and recently banked customers, what are the alternatives, what is the way forward for FBN outside telecom company channels who are now considering potentially major competitors via FinTech, Flutterwave, Opay, et cetera. And then the third, last year management was on record as acknowledging newspaper rumor of FBN looking at potential merger between some partners, but this was not confirmed. So what is the way forward in this? But now, can the company put a statement out regarding Heritage and Polaris now, even if nothing is expected to proceed? Is there a reason why this is still hanging? So those are the first set of questions that we have.
Okay, thank you very much, Tolu. I'll just would like to request Ini, that's in charge of international banking. He will have to speak to the first question around mobile banking. And then I would request the CFO of the commercial bank, Patrick, to respond to the question on the telco saga and back charges on USSD. And I will also request that the CEO of the commercial bank, Shola, he will speak on the question, the M&A question that was posed. Let's start with Ini. Ini, please.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. With respect to the question on the prospects for what we see in mobile banking across the sub-region, at the start of Q4 last year, we launched a brand new mobile banking app for our Senegalese franchise. And thus far, we've seen very encouraging results with respect to uptake and acceptability by the marketplace. And we believe that this portends a strong area of potential growth across the sub-region. When you look at many of the markets we operate in, where we're present in 5 West African markets and 1 in Central Africa, arguably they lag where Nigeria is today in terms of the infrastructure associated with mobile or digital banking. In some cases, the deployment of central switches, integration, and so on and so forth are still in their infancy. That notwithstanding, we believe that As has been demonstrated in more mature markets, these represent viable tools for rapid financial inclusion and thus growth in digital banking products and revenues. So we're very optimistic around it. We continue to push it aggressively, and we work with the regulatory authorities in the various markets that we're present in to drive the environment that will promote the growth. Thank you.
Thank you, Ine. Patrick, will you want to take the question on the telcos and USSD segment?
Thank you. The USSD saga is really about how much the network fee should be, and passively but importantly, who should bear that cost. Interestingly, customers used to bear the cost of the session costs, until a couple of banks came together with some telcos to figure out how they could drive the growth of the whole channel. And that's and that shifted away from the customer. And by the way, the channel growth plan was successful. So I guess we're back to with the agreement to of the cost at about $7. We are now back to where we used to be before. And a critical option on the table is really to have the customers do what they used to do, which is take on this cost. But the beauty of this cost is been capped for the transaction itself, as opposed to the previous arrangement, which was by session, which could have been extremely expensive and for customers today. Now, having said that, the other question is, what does it mean for adoption and growth of that channel? Customers taking on that cost, I mean, one option would be you might see some attrition, particularly from customers who just used to use the channel for no particular fantastic reason. But we think overall, the big difference between now and what used to exist is that the customers have come to experience the channel. They see there's a lot of, they appreciate the convenience. They see the value. It's now a way of life. And we don't think the use of the digital solution is going to just change, because you are now being charged $7. And if you want to compare that compared to $50 or $100 you will spend if you have to travel from one location to the next to either pay a bill or to cash money and things like that. So having said that, we think overall, looking at the digital channel, attrition towards cash, which is the alternative solution, will be less. Speaking specifically to USSD, what we see more happening, if at all the adoption rate drops, is that the customers might choose to use another digital channel that's available to them that is equally convenient. It could be mobile, it could be ATMs, as the case might be. But either way, whether they still use their USSD at $7, which is similar to what used to happen before, only that the cost is better controlled, or whether they move to mobile platforms or they use the ATMs, we are available to serve them. As you know, we are very strong across all these channels. Last year alone, we made about $48 billion in revs, and from these channels, including the agency. We're number one or number two on basically the various digital channels. So pretty much at home, available and ready to serve them. So in summary, we see that cost being borne by the customers. in terms of overall digital revs, I mean, that might be an initial impact, but on a sustainable basis, we don't see much changing in terms of the trajectory, growth trajectory of the digital channels. And because of our strength across all the channels, we're very well positioned to continue to benefit from the growth of digital business. Now, that said, I mean, our viewpoint in spite, we will continue to actively track price elasticity of demand, because within that boundary, we have the flexibility to do lots of things, to modulate things as necessary. So yes, we see the issue, but the beauty is there's a solution on the table. And because there's a solution on the table, it makes planning and outcome a lot more predictable. And we think, we believe we're in a very good position to continue to drive USSD growth, or if there's a shift to other digital channels, and dominate those channels as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. I believe we have just one more question, which the CEO of the Commercial Bank can take for us. Shola, please.
Thank you, UK. When rumor broke out in the course of FY 2020 about First Bank being involved in some M&A conversation, what we had said on our call then is that as a serious-minded institution that has been in existence now for 127 years, an integral part of our business strategy is to continuously evaluate our options over and above what we do in terms of the organic growth. And depending on where the market is, depending on the type of opportunity, we'll make up our mind. That statement and that position hasn't changed. We will continue to scan the environment to look for opportunity to do transactions. If we find, we'll go ahead, but we don't find anything that meets our very strict parameters and criteria, we'll continue to focus on our organic business growth. Thank you.
Thank you. Tolu, I think you can go back to the Q&A, since we've cleared the questions you received earlier.
That's correct, sir. So just go to, so then the question, so we have the question from Goman Kuma, actually has his hand raised. So please go ahead with your question, Kuma.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this session. It's been quite informative. I have a couple of questions, mainly on the NPL and the commercial bank's capitalization. So the first question, what do you expect the NPL ratio in Q1 2021 or even H1 2021, given there have been some forbidden policies last year? So do we think whether there will be any backlog of increase of NPL this year? And what is the current NPL coverage ratio? And also you've mentioned that the group is trying to decrease NPL ratio to below 5% in 3 years. What kind of a strategy that you are putting in place in order to realize this objective? This is my first question. The second one, it's really good to hear that the commercial bank's capitalization has been improved, but still we can see that it's still slightly below the peers. So I'm wondering, what kind of strategy or actions will be taken or expected to be taken in the near future? Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take two more questions. We agreed to batch in threes. So next question, please.
So the next question is from Ronak Gadia. Ronak, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Uke and team. Firstly, I'd just like to say congratulations with the increase in capital. It seems like the turnaround is finally complete. You had your doubters, me being one of them. So once again, well done, and especially for proving me wrong. With that being said, just a couple of follow-up questions, maybe just on that. Firstly, you know, the previous caller mentioned we saw a big increase in capital or capital adequacy ratio. Within that, there was, if I can look at your capital ratio on a year-on-year basis, there's a big deduction of around 40 billion naira related to your regulatory risk reserves, which didn't recur in 2020. Could you just talk about why that was? So that's the first question. The second question is on your five-year strategy. You know, you indicated that there is a new five-year strategy because the turnaround is complete. So maybe you could just talk about that specifically. You know, as you mentioned, the focus over the last 5 years was just to clean up the balance sheet. As a result of that, you know, the PBT of the bank is now much lower than peers of a similar balance sheet size. So could you just talk about how, you know, how First Bank will go from a PBT of 80 to 100 billion to around 2 to 20 where some of your peers are? And the third question is on your NPL cover. If I just look at your specific NPL cover, it's around 35.7%, which seems very low relative to historical levels that this bank used to maintain, and also very low compared to peers. So if you could just talk about why that is so low and if you're intending to increase that. Thank you.
So in line with just one more question. With this, GFD, I think before going to the next question, if it's okay, I think we can take those questions. That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think there are about three questions on NPL, including the one on plan to achieve sub 5% during our SPP. There's also the question around coverage. So I would request that the CRO of the commercial bank takes those questions. And then after that, the CFO of the commercial bank will take questions on capital. There's also one on regulatory reserves. So let's go on this. But Patrick, you will also note the question that was raised, I think it's general really, around what we intend to do to improve profitability. This is by Ronak, growing it to the hundreds level. So perhaps you can also take that question. Thank you. Shegu, please start.
Thank you. This is Olusegun Alebio, Chief Risk Officer of First Bank. With the forbearance coming to an end, we don't expect a spike in our NPL. Note the fact that most of the accounts affected, or at that time, were in sectors affected by COVID. And you agree that Nigeria has recovered faster than expected and cash flow has resumed. Indeed, oil and gas upstream where crude oil price implemented at that time. It's already up at about $63 per barrel. You can imagine what is going on in oil and gas upstream and in services. So what people will expect will be spike in NPL, but that's not going to happen. What you will see going forward will be the NPL coming down. We did promise last year that the NPL will come down further and we deliver that. From 9.9 to 7.7, about 200 basis points. And for this year, you will see further reduction in NPL because we are working towards the 5% strategy that the GMD mentioned. And for us to achieve the 5% NPL as set by the board, one is for us, with operating environment improving, to improve on recovery. So recovery will be central to that. I can indeed, I mean, explain to you that and confirm that we've made a lot of progress with respect of that. Of course, there'll be loan growth. And you know, loan growth will have a way of balancing things out. There'll be restructuring, and then there'll be asset realization write-off. Because again, if you've recovered collateral and you've gotten the virtual everything, whatever is left, of course, will have to be checked off. So you are going to have that. We are confident that based on our plan and what we are saying, that we will achieve the 5% NPL asset. On coverage, Ronak, what you've seen is based on model. And also reason why you will see movement in regulatory risk reserve, because if the regulator can see through your books and your model is predicting that this is the real impairment charge, of course you did exactly that. We've explained earlier, and permit me to explain again, that our policy is based on 130% for safe value. For us to be at 48 coverage, I'm saying to myself that I will have lost over 65% of the value of that collateral for me to be able to realize only 48% of my money. So you know that in reality, really in real estate market, in market like Nigeria, real estate hardly depreciate faster the way people would anticipate. Even in recession, properties are going up. So we don't see that. And the model has predicted well. And that's what we have seen across. Going into 2021, we plan to increase coverage. Not because the model is no wrong, but because we want to build overlay. So we'll build overlay in 2021. Thank you.
Okay, Patrick, please.
Okay, thank you very much. So I think two questions have been posed. The first is really the movement in regulatory risk reserve. And then the second is how to grow PBT to the level of peers. But when I get to that, I'll modify it a bit, because we actually do not need to have, by the time we grow our PBT to the level of peers, we would have very outrageous ROE, particularly relative to peers. So I would modify that a bit when I get to that. In terms of regulatory risk reserve, if you recall, regulatory risk reserve is really the regulator coming in and applying general accounting principles under local standards to make adjustments to capital reserve for credits, for potential NPLs. And so essentially what happens is you've gone through the model, the CRO just spoke about that, you've articulated the credit reserve you need for the quality of your risk assets. That is tested, validated, and that is locked down and considered sufficient. But the regulator still maintains a model it's been using for, maybe more than 20 years now, and says, based on that model, what else do I need to do, without necessarily recognizing the intricate nature of each of those asset class as you would, as we do under IFRS and the ECL model. So what has happened this year? And if you've tracked some of the discussions we've been having on this course, we've consistently made the point that we expect RRR to keep going down because the quality of our books is getting much better. The concerns under NGAAP actually falling away. The regulator may have been slow to respond to those changes, but that capital reserve that the regulator has been taking off the table will have to be released once it's clear the trajectory of our loan quality vis-a-vis our ECL. So what has really happened is the regulator appreciating what we've been speaking about and testing what it is we've done and being comfortable with what it is we've done and considering the RRR less relevant compared to prior years. The regulator has taken its time to come to this realization, but we are finally there. And we just happen to have been explaining to the investor community ahead that this was coming to pass. To the second point around what do we need to do to get our PBT to the level of peers? If you permit me to rephrase that, that would perhaps be to get our ROE to say, let's say 20%. We closed last year at about 12.5, 12.6. But the reality is that to move from 12.5, 12.6 to about 20 billion and 20% is really about 60 billion, maybe a little less than that, which frankly is doable. And so what are the various levers we have to play around with? The most important one is has to do with interest income. Just note that, we'll come back to that shortly. Now, if we look on the cost side, and I'm speaking about cost really broadly. So we have the cost of funds, cost of risk, OPEX. I'm speaking about cost broadly. Cost of risk, we're in a much better place than we used to be. We have a much better handle of it, and we expect that to continue into 2021. And so therefore, we think we should not really be far off from where we used to be. In terms of cost of funds, you've noticed our cost of fund trajectory. It's been heading south, which is a good place to be. And that has supported earnings. Even though we expect the overall yield environment to improve to the end of the year, we think based on the funding options available to us, as well as our tactical decisions, we can keep cost of funds reasonably around where it is right now. If it's to go up, maybe just a few basis points if cost of funds is to go up. So again, that lever, we believe we have a good control over. OPEX, you would notice we've consistently said a lot of the initiatives around technology, a lot of the initiatives around process, a whole bunch of things we're doing were oriented towards improving our OPEX. And if you look at First Bank on a benchmark basis to other tier one banks, and look at the OPEX CAGR over the last 5 years, we're actually best in class. We don't think that is going to change in 2021. So in summary, on the cost end, part of what we will do to get our ROE where it is we want to get it to is to continue to do all the great things we've been doing to control our costs. So we're now into the realms of revenue. There are two big buckets of revenue, interest and non-interest. I'll get to interest last, but interest is perhaps our biggest lever. In terms of non-interest income, we've repeatedly discussed and explained the things we're doing around non-interest income, the transactional activities, whether on our mobile, on our digital platforms, or in trade. So mobile, USSD, what we're doing around agency, you look at the volumes, you look at the trajectory, they've been growing. We expect that they will continue to grow into 2021, pushing our ROE into the realms we want to get the ROE. In terms of trade, you'd also notice on a year-on-year basis, our trade revs went up. We expect it to continue to move up as we continue to improve our trade capabilities, and we continue to benefit from the ability to properly price trade transactions under the current operating environment. We made some trading gains last year, and volatility creates opportunities. We took advantage of those. We still see some of that volatility happening this year, and so we expect that will continue to happen. But overall, on a transactional basis, particularly given the growth trends we have in trade or our agent banking business, in terms of transactional accounts grew about 90% on a year-on-year basis. So agency, mobile, USSD, all the SWOT, those volumes will keep growing. And with it, our revenue, which will close the ROE gap to 20%, using 20% as a benchmark. The last one, which is where I started from, but I'm coming to it last, is really around interest income. What you will notice is that is the significant interest rate sensitivity of our balance sheet, of our earning assets. So whilst that has penalized us when rates were crashing the last couple of years, particularly last year when they really plummeted, as the rates begin to move up, we should see our NIMs opening up. And if we deliver on that cost of fund constraint control that we spoke about earlier on, the increase in yields almost all translates into increase in NIMs. A 7% increase in our cost thereabout or yield thereabout translates into about 28 billion in increase in interest income. So if we're to flip that differently, just growing, for example, NIBOR increasing by 1% would translate into more than 50 billion increase in profits based on what it is we've seen in terms of how our cost of fund modulates and our yield modulates. To be very specific, part of what we've shared in the financials, that will translate into about 58 billion increase in profits. So if you pause for a moment and appreciate the fact that we can do a great job, or we can continue to execute what we've done well to control our cost base, and I'm using cost really broadly, OPEX, cost of risk, cost of funds, and we have the capacity to continue to drive our transactional income. And in the digital space, it continues to grow. And we are in an environment where yields are beginning to move up. Then you can appreciate how that gap can be closed. The reality is, depending on how quickly yields move up, that gap can be closed in 18 months, 24 months, 12 months. It all depends. Just playing around with these variables. I hope this helps. If you need me to clarify anything, I'm happy to do that. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Patrick and Shego also. I think we can move on to other questions. Tolu.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Thank you very much, Jendi. So the next question is from Soji Sholanke. Soji, go ahead with the question.
Yeah, hi, good evening, everyone. This is Soji from Renaissance Capital. Thank you for the clarification so far. Let me just ask one. I mean, I have a few questions, but if Patrick can just clarify the numbers he just gave, and I think I had 1 percentage point NIBOR increase drives 58 billion increase in profits. Was that what you said? You know, if you can, and you also said something about a 7% increase in yield translates to 58 billion increase in interest income. I mean, just clarify those numbers again, that'll be helpful. But let me just see my other questions because I might get cut off. The first one is around your agency banking transactions. Can you kindly break this down into withdrawals, deposits, P2P transfers, and bill payments in terms of share of transaction volumes? And then also just on agency banking. So for last year, how many customers transact via agency banking roughly? And what was agency banking revenues in 2020? Then also just still on, you know, holding on to agency banking. I mean, we just got off, you know, Access Bank's call and, you know, they report having less than half of your number of agents and they did 8.5 trillion in agency volumes, right? From your slides, I see roughly 10 trillion in TPV for agency and you have double their agents. You know, why is the gap so little? What do you think explains, I mean, from your point of view, what do you think explains this? Then just a few more questions on FX revaluation gains. From your slide, sorry, from your financials, I don't really see a clear reporting of FX revaluation gains. Could you kindly clarify what was the size of FX revaluation gains last year? And what's the size of your net long FX position? And if you can just tell us, you know, guidance for a few key things. So margins, non-interest revenue growth, OPEX growth, cost of risk, right? And do you have an ROE target for this year, for 2021? And also your expected growth in the loan book and deposits. So I'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Soji. All those questions are for Patrick, but I would just say that with respect to the last bit, guidance, we obviously have not provided any guidance and we will not at this time. The market and the industry, the nation is still in a flux. So we are still studying the variables and when we have everything properly knocked out, we'll give guidance, but we're not going to give you guidance today's call. But the second bit, I think you asked questions around agent bank and then comparison with other banks and all that. Patrick will take that. But if you can just pause, Patrick, and we'll take another question. I think there's another hand up. Tolu, before Patrick responds.
Yes, so that's correct. There's another hand from Ronak, and then we'll take question from Ronak, and then we'll respond to the questions. Go ahead, Ronak.
Yeah, thanks, Tolu. Just a couple of follow-ups. One of them was very much in line with what Soji asked. If you could just clarify what the net open position for the bank is, because it seems like you recorded an FX revaluation loss, which I'm finding it hard to understand, as you had guided that the bank has a long USD position. So that's the first one. The second one, maybe just a bit of a follow-up from what Patrick was saying, specifically on trading income. Could you just give a bit more guidance, and specifically for the trading income you earned last year, could you just maybe give a split in terms of how much of that was, you know, proper trading income and how much of that was due to, you know, mark-to-market gains on your investment securities portfolio? And the final one, also a follow-up, this one from what Shagun said earlier, it does seem like the NPL cover is going to go up this year. Is there any specific target that you have in mind? Thank you.
Okay, Tolu, do you want to read any question you had received previously, or you want us to go ahead and respond to these two?
I think we can go ahead given the number of questions and from those two analysts. We should go ahead. Thank you.
Patrick, if you can just start, and then Shegu will come in and speak to the coverage question raised by Ronak.
Okay. So thank you very much. These are quite a number of questions. So in terms of the interest rate sensitivity, a 7% increase in NIBOR translates to about 28 billion increase in our PBT. So that's interest rate sensitivity. So what I then tried to do was to translate that into NIMs as would impact our books. And that is how I came about 0.5% about that and about 1% going on to about 58, 59 billion in profits. Okay. Now, in terms of agency, specific questions about breaking down by, for want of a better word, by specific product on the agent channel. Whilst we would not go into that because this is a call, right? And this is not information, tactical information that you really want to throw out there. I can provide some guidance in terms of how our agency business is doing. Like I said, we've grew count on a year-on-year basis by about north of 90%. We currently, last year alone, we did about 295 million transactions on our agents, through our agents. And in terms of revs, 15 billion. I can't speak for Access figures because that was the name you put on the table, but I can speak for our figures. The figures are really great. And we see traction and we continue to roll out agents. We continue to grow that business. Number of customers, I hope the point around transaction counts is helpful. And we track that much better than we track number of customers because the count is really what speaks to business and momentum going through that channel. In terms of FX reval, we did about 6 billion last year, but we had an FX trading loss that eventually shrunk everything to, I think, about 2 billion last year. So yes, we are long, but yes, not as long as some of our peers that are reporting 58 billion and some of those other nice figures. The GMD already spoke around guidance. He's discussed that, so I'll skip that. Then in terms of trading income, speaking to fair value through P&L, that would be about 16.5 billion for the banking group. And then speaking to actual trading gains and positions cleared and all that, that would be about 45, 47 billion for the year. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Runa. The GMD spoke earlier that at this time, we will not be in a position to give guidance the way you will love it. But permit me to say that we don't envisage that coverage will be less than 60% this year, at least. But I'm sure by half year, we'll have clearer picture. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ronak, you know, we will continue to engage on this matter. I know how important it is to you. So this is April. Hopefully by June, when we'll have done 6 months, we can respond in more detail to some of the issues we are not in a position to talk about right now in terms of guidance. Okay, Tolu, other questions, please.
Thank you very much, sir. So there's, I'll take a question from Labby Williams, which says, could the various banks are looking at becoming old calls with various plans. What is FBN's strategy for an old call aside from core bank? So that's one of the question we have in the chat room. Just to check, Soji, I still see your hand and Ronak up. Is that the previous or this additional set of questions? Okay. So that we can start with the question with Labi. Okay, those are all done. So just take the question that I just read out. That'll be fine, sir.
Okay. Okay, I can take that. I can take that. Thank you very much, Labi, for the question. I think without being immodest, let me say that we were kind of clairvoyant in seeing the benefit of restructuring through the holding company model about 8-9 years ago. What other players are, you know, looking to do now, we saw the opportunities and we saw the need to diversify away from the commercial bank 9 years ago. But to remind us, because your question alluded to, aside from the core bank, we are not just in the commercial bank, we also have investment in the merchant bank, okay? And then we also have investment in asset management company, all right? So that's one area that we need to flag, and it's, that business is doing very, very well, albeit consolidated, you know, into the merchant bank business or the Quest Group. We also have investment in the custody business, pension fund custodial business. So that's another area some of the banks that want to now restructure through holding company want to get into. We are quite active also in insurance brokerage, as you know. So really we are a diversified holding company, and we will continue to review the market opportunities. I'm aware that there are a few other sectors that are looking good, but the benefit of having a portfolio is you constantly review and then get into the sectors that are looking good. And that is what we do as a holding company. So to your question, we are already well diversified. How we enter other spaces that are looking good will now be a matter of the returns we see, and then the regulatory environment, and of course, how quickly we can position, because we don't want to play, if you like, a second fiddle. We like to enter the sector and dominate the sector. That is what all our businesses have come to deliver to us. So we will keep reviewing the opportunities out there and then take decisions in the best interest of our stakeholders. So it goes beyond commercial bank currently. Tolu?
Thank you very much, JND. Okay, I think we have a fresh question from Soji. Soji, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you, Tolu. Just two quick questions. So the first one is, you know, perhaps, you know, Ine or someone else would clarify, what's your house view? I know there's a lot of talk around expectations for an increase in interest rates. But by how much do you envisage interest rates could rise this year? And also what's your outlook for the current year as well? It's currently around 4.10. And the second question is perhaps more for Segun Risk. Could you clarify what the ongoing issues are with ITO? There's been, you know, a number of articles in the press, you know, with Shell, court cases, etc. I mean, what's happened? What's really happening there? How do you think this will get resolved? And for your bank itself, you know, what's your exposure in dollar terms? You know, where is this currently classified? And to what extent have you provided for this? Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Please go ahead. Any other questions so we can take
this? Yes, so there's a, we have a question from Kato, and then we can take a response to the questions after Kato speaks. Kato, please go ahead, the question. Hello. Hello, Kato, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Now we can.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Please go ahead. Sorry. I was speaking to myself. I had a strategic question really for UK and maybe Ini. I know Ini and myself have been watching a lot of these fintech valuations in Nigeria and the multiples to revenue that PE firms have been paying. And not one of these companies even does 10% of your electronic banking revenue. And some of these guys have been given $1 billion valuations. What can you do strategically to kind of monetize what it is? Because you've built an unbelievable machine that is digital, but the world just doesn't seem to get it. What can you do to kind of realize that value for the asset that you have built? What are the options available to you that you're thinking internally? Because is it possible to spin it off? Because it's just illogical that someone is paying so much for businesses that aren't even a tenth of your size, more than your current market value. And just want to know what you're thinking about in terms of realizing your true valuations. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kato. That's a very interesting question, and we'll respond to that. Did you want to take another question, or we just clear these ones? First of all, Ini can speak to the questions around the interest rate outlook, and then Shegu will take the question on ITO. I think there was one on ITO and current classification. Please go ahead, Ini.
Okay. Well, basically speaking to the outlook, I think we all agree that interest rates need to move up. Nigeria is not a low interest rate environment, especially when you look at where inflation levels are. Again, also, I think we can also agree that the currency also needs to depreciate somewhat. When you look at where it is officially at 410, you look at the whether the parallel market is, you look at the issues around the lack of liquidity that still persists. So we're far from normalization. And normalization will need and will require an adjustment of both of those variables. Unfortunately, both of those variables need to weaken. So interest rates need to move a little bit higher, as well as the currency. Now, the question will now be, depending on how you push or pull either lever, that will determine the quantum of movement on either side. When you look at what the central bank has done thus far, we clearly see that one, it's made an adjustment in the currency. So we moved from the 360-70 handle to 410-11 handle. They've made an adjustment on interest rates. So we've seen the OMO rates move back to double digits to around 10%. I would posit that we're still pretty far from equilibrium, so more adjustments need to happen. But I think more meaningful adjustments, and my view is the bigger lever that needs to happen is on the domestic interest rate side. So even though you have OMO rates where closer to where they should be, the overall level of domestic interest rates is way too low. So you can't have corporate deposit rates, retail deposit rates in the low single digits. That's not going to work. So we've got to see an aggregate move in the overall level of rates in the environment. And then that will probably limit the amount of currency adjustment that could potentially be required to put things in equilibrium. So as Patrick alluded to, we believe that in the course of the year, those adjustments will happen, especially on the interest rate side. And that will probably modulate some of the needed adjustment on the currency side to bring things closer in balance. So we think there's still some room to grow. Thank you.
Okay, Shegu, please.
Thank you, Soji. The issue of ITO is not what people read in the press. Let me address this way. ITO is an asset that produces between 85,000 to 100,000 barrels per day. So if you have an asset that can produce that, even with oil price where it is today, you know you are in cash. ITO has 20 years license renewed in 2019. We have 18 more years to go. We also know in commodity market that you must do sculpting because there will be time that the price might be low, that you just need to take care of your interest. And there will be time of boom that you have to now claw back and move ahead. You cannot have smooth payment. Three, the real people struggling there, basically, you see parties to the contract. But more importantly is that Shell is the off-taker of the crude being produced by ITO. Shell is the crude handler. Shell is a lender to ITO, the same asset. So when parties disagree this way, it's much more beyond capacity. For we lenders, we see capacity as strong, we see cash flow as good, but the issues that need to be resolved are just issues of how do I evacuate my crude and how do I sell it? As simple as that. And if you read in the press about a month ago, I think DPR came in on one or two issues, especially the issues of dispute on what crude being lifted and not crude being lifted and all that. So we allow, because this is before the court, so I think we allow the court to decide on some of this so that we don't get involved in this. However, but one thing that is clear is that you have an asset that has capacity. You have an asset that can do 85,000, 100,000 barrels per day. You have an asset with 18 years license more, unexpired. And you have offtake agreements that allow you to stabilize and pay. So what the worst that can happen is for the lenders to restructure over 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and you get paid out. And if you have 18 years to go and you have asset that can produce for the next 40 years, I mean, why don't you just restructure for 8 years, 6 years, 7 years, and just allow this to pay down itself orderly? As for classification, it is stage two. And I think it's stage two across because we still have cash coming in. It's not that you stop producing crude. It's not that crude has stopped selling. It's just because of this pool that parties are trying to resolve the other way. And I think we've gotten to a level where all parties have agreed now that we just have to go sit down and resolve it and allow this to be down itself in orderly fashion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I would request the CEO of the Commercial Bank to take the question on digital business and the valuation of fintechs. Shola, please go ahead.
Thank you, UK. Before I respond to the question on digital, just a closing remark on ITO. The relationship is currently troubled, like Shegun said, but the consortium of lenders, of which we are a key part of that, we are doing all that is necessary to ensure that we get to the destination safely. That's the much that we can say, given the fact that part of this is before the is prejudiced at this particular point in time. But be rest assured that we are working as a team, the consortium of lenders. We meet regularly, and we're on top of the situation. That's the much that I can say. And there's actually a periodic meeting of the CEOs of the lenders. So this gets to the highest level within each of the lending institutions to ensure that we give it the attention that is required. Regarding the valuation of DT, you're absolutely right. We're very proud of the kind of machine that we've built, whether you're looking at a USSD business where we currently have over 11 million active users, or you're looking at the mobile bank, or indeed you're looking at the agency banking. We have our strategy around what we need to do regarding this formidable machine that we have built in terms of what to do with them strategically and ensure that we get the appropriate valuation upside. Again, that's the much that we can disclose on this call, but we are fully conscious of the fact that the market is not giving us the right valuation as far as this machine is concerned. That's number one. Two, we are also fully conscious that we have successfully built by far the largest bank-led agency banking business in this part of the world. If you recall when the GMD presented some few slides, this is one area where we have built some incredible capabilities, and we expect that we would, we are already exporting these to other African locations or jurisdictions where we have businesses. Imagine what this could potentially mean in a country like DRC Congo, a country of about 80, 85 million people with landmass 2.5 times the size of Nigeria. So we're quite fully conscious of what the upside could potentially be, and we are strategically evaluating our options. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ola. And we'll turn back to Tolu to continue with the questions.
Thank you very much, MD. Thank you, Cyril. There are no questions, additional questions on the chat room, but I see yet another hand from Soji. Is that okay? I just saw that. I think that's a previous. So at this point, there are no further questions, GMB. So in view of that, I will now invite you for the closing remarks. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Tolu. First, I'd like to thank all the attendees. We've got like over 80 that connected to this call. It speaks to the interest, sustained interest of you all on this company. This is just confirming to you what we said last year, that this 2021 would be a very remarkable year. We believe the group has been transformed, and you can see it. All the metrics you are tracking showed positive trend, and that is going to continue. We do think that we have built a strong platform, and our systems are now well positioned to take advantage of the growth anticipated for 2021. We're looking forward to announcing the first quarter result. It will be this April, once we conclude our reviews. And you see that the strategy is working, and we will sustain it. And so I thank you for attending. If there are questions that we haven't fully taken up or satisfactorily answered, the door is open, as always. Tolu will be here anytime to respond, or you can come directly to me, as some of you do, and we'll be glad to give further context to the performance for 2020 and the plan for 2021. I look forward to hosting the next investor and analyst call, and I do look forward to seeing all of you and more joining us to understand our growth plans. With that, we would bring this to a close, and I thank you for participating today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your participation. You may now disconnect.